the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast for two siblings who love books.
I love, my personal favorite book is the Monster Book of Monsters.
Me too. I like to leave it on people's chairs so when they sit down it bites them on the bum.
Oh, I'm kind of surprised Draco doesn't do that to someone over the course of the book.
The Monster Book of Monsters would probably just bite his hand.
That's true. And then he would pretend that he couldn't use it for a month.
Yeah, exactly.
Little twat.
The book hurt my head.
I'm starting to think we talk about Draco more than any other character.
He's just so easy to hate.
It's worrying me a little.
Secret secondary protagonist. Draco Malfoy.
Draco Malfoy and that annoying guy with the scar. Draco Malfoy is not good enough for his father. That's
book
two.
Psychological study.
This week we read Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yes, we did. See how much I have to contribute?
Obviously, because we are continuing our Harry Potter cast extravaganza.
Hooray!
So, we decided instead of reading book 5, we should probably read book 3 next.
Yeah, that's probably a good decision. Tune in next week when Ben is shocked to discover this is not a trilogy.
What would it be like if you read, like, book 7 and then backwards?
Read them in reverse order. The first time you read them.
That'd be hella weird. I'd be so confused.
Like, what is happening? I don't know what any of these words mean.
Especially in book 7, like, God.
Who are these people?
Well, anyway, back to book 3, which has, well, it doesn't have nothing to do with book 7. It has quite a bit to do with book 7, but
but officially, we don't know that yet.
Officially, yes.
A lot of the intro data is going to be very similar to the last couple episodes.
We do have a plot synopsis for you, though.
Yes.
It's a double pun.
It is. Dementors suck. For serious.
Give you a second. Soak it in. Groan.
Get all the multiple entendre. There's two of them!
There is two. Think about it. I guess, even though this book was published over a decade ago, I'm going to go ahead and give a quick spoiler alert, even though we haven't been doing that for the previous ones, just because if you are reading them for the first time, I feel like book 3 has a pretty fucking crazy twist.
Yeah, that's
fair. If you're reading it for the first time. And I'm about to talk about it, so...
I'd even say it has two pretty serious twists.
Serious twist.
Boy, I hope we don't use that joke.
We better stop saying that word now. Yes, it does. But the one I'm thinking of goes all the way back to book 1, which is why it's
right,
kind of mind blowing. So just a brief summary. Harry runs away from the Dursleys because, as always, they suck a ton of ass. He ends up at Diagon Alley after running away.
Why don't you just slam all the doors?
Good fucking God, what's happening? So ends up in Diagon Alley. He's off the hook. He goes to school. You're basic stiff. He's introduced to Dementors, which, when near you, make you relive your worst memories, and they tend to affect him more than anybody else because it turns out that he remembers his parents getting killed by Voldemort, which is probably worse than my worst memory, which would be, like, I don't know, being sad one day.
I think my worst memories would make me feel embarrassed more than scared.
Yeah, like, oh, shit.
Oh, my pride.
He gets to school, turns out Hagrid is now the Care of Magical Creatures teacher. He introduces them to hippogriffs. Draco immediately gets injured by one, and then you get your first plot point, which is that this hippogriff Buckbeak is in danger of being executed the entire book because Draco's a twat. There's a big Quidditch tournament stuff going on. Gryffindor ends up winning the House Cup. Harry gets a brand new broom, blah, blah, blah. They actually have a competent Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher who teaches Harry how to defend himself against Dementors since they affect him so strongly. And then at the end of the whole thing, we discover that this criminal, Sirius Black, who everyone has been thinking has been trying to kill Harry the entire book, is actually trying to kill Ron's rat, Scabbers, because Scabbers is actually a person in the form of a rat named Peter Pettigrew, who, surprise, was actually the one who betrayed Harry's parents to Voldemort.
So, yeah, and there's really not any telegraphing of that, I would say. Like, you don't really... It's the type of twist that is not one where I think you can pick up on it if you're super smart.
Right, like... Ron's rat never does anything person-like.
Right.
He's always just a rat. And, you know, when he's losing his hair and losing weight and all that stuff, you have the excuse of Hermione's new cat tormenting him. And I guess if you were just one of those people who expected a turn at every event... No, I feel like you still couldn't predict that. It's just crazy. It's, like, out of nowhere. But it makes sense. Because it has been there. So.
Right.
Yeah. Because I think... Oh, I don't know if they mentioned he's missing a toe in the first one. Although that, if they do, that would be crazy. And our other big twist of the book is, of course, finding out that Sirius is... a good guy, and not the one who betrayed Harry's parents to Voldemort.
Right. That being said, why don't we talk about some of the new characters and a couple of the characters who have gotten a little more personality
yeah.
in this book.
And I guess we'll go ahead and start with the slightly older generation. Actually, everyone we're going to be talking about is the older generation.
I think that's true this time around.
But we'll go ahead and start with the Marauders, since that's who we're just talking about.
Yes.
So it turns out that Harry's dad was friends with not only Sirius in school, but Lupin, who's the new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. And the three of them, in addition to Peter, all banded together and called themselves the Marauders. And they were basically like Fred and George of 20 years ago.
Yeah, more or less. That's a reasonable description.
So we have Lupin. Like I mentioned, he's our first competent Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher.
Yep, he actually shows them how to defend themselves against various nasty creatures.
Yeah, they learn a lot of stuff.
They do. And he teaches Harry, specifically, how to do some pretty strong magic to defend himself against the Dementors.
Mm-hmm.
He's also kind of a stand-in father figure for Harry to some degree.
Yeah, he gives him some advice throughout the book and listens to his concerns a little bit. And
definitely takes him under his wing just a bit, you know, especially with the private lessons and... I'm sure some of that is because he was friends with Harry's
That's
father.
What I was about to say. But he never mentions it, which... I mean, I guess he's just... This is part of what I like about Lupin.
Yeah.
Is that he's kind of a reserved, quiet guy, but he's usually very reasonable.
Yes.
And so he doesn't just barge in being like, Harry, I was best friends with the dad!
Right.
And he's good at keeping a secret when it needs to be kept and saying things when they need to be said. And one of the things I like about him, actually, is that Snape, when he is being a douche, Lupin isn't really perturbed by it because he's like, well, you know, we kind of deserve it.
Right, yeah.
We didn't get along when we went to school together, so it's cool. But he trusts him still to make the potion for him, and...
Yeah.
I don't know.
He's kind of a... He's a... I don't want to say a kind person, but maybe just a generic good person. Has a lot of ways of showing it, and one of them is that he has faith in the competence of somebody who he doesn't get along with.
Yeah.
that he does seem to actually care about the students a little bit, that, I don't know, in terms of being more reserved, like, he's a really low-key entrance. He's asleep on the train until the Dementors show up.
Mm-hmm. And then, keeps his cool.
Yeah.
Really well.
And is also in the, when he's teaching the class about the Boggart and how to deal with that, he does a good job of walking them through the lesson, helps Neville actually be successful in a lesson for once.
I liked how his, basically, not his first introduction, because his first introduction is on the train, but his first introduction is teachers. Snape insults Neville, you know, saying he sucks at magic,
right.
And then Lupin immediately turns it around and helps him succeed at something.
Right.
That's what a good teacher is supposed to do.
That's right.
Snape, you are a horrible teacher. Like, you may be awesome making potions, but he is a goddamn awful teacher.
Yeah.
It makes me sad. And I guess the other thing about Lupin that's also a reveal at the end, although this one is one that you could pick up on if you read carefully.
Yes.
Is the fact that he's a werewolf.
Right.
And we get a couple hints at that throughout the book.
Yeah, he needs a potion, it seems, about once a month.
Mm-hmm.
He
misses class about once a month.
Snape asks him to go research werewolves and makes a bunch of comments about how unobservant the class is.
Uh-huh. And the Boggart, his Boggart is never described as a full moon, but as a silvery orb.
Yes.
And if you could put that all together, then it all makes a lot of sense.
Right, yeah.
Which is how Hermione figured it out, because she's Hermione.
Right. She does, she figures stuff out, it's what she does.
And I like how it seems like, you know, Lupin mentions that he's basically never been able to get a job his adult life because people are so prejudiced against werewolves. Kind of the bigotry of expecting a werewolf to be,
well, basically a dangerous killer.
Right, all the time.
Right.
Though. And when he's not in his transformed state, he's essentially the opposite of that.
Right. He might be the best person at the school.
Like, if I was a werewolf rights activist, I'd make Lupin my poster boy.
There you go.
Be like, look, they're good. So.
Yes, and so the other marauders we don't know quite as much about.
No, we don't get as much of them, but.
So Sirius is, there's a thread throughout the book of him having escaped from Azkaban. I mean, this dangerous criminal who killed all these people, and turns out that's not true, but when we finally meet him, he's scrawny and basically looks like hell because he's been living around Dementors for over a decade.
Yeah, and on the run, and
and kind of a little crazed for revenge.
Yes.
Against Peter Pettigrew.
Yeah.
Not entirely unreasonably.
Fairly understandably.
Yeah.
And one of the things I did like is, you know, we have a couple instances where he tries to get into the Gryffindor common room, again, because he's after Peter as Scabbers, not because
right.
he's after Harry, like everyone thinks. And the fat lady won't let him in, so he slashes her up. And then he gets into the Gryffindor common room, and he slashes the drapes around Ron's bed with a knife, trying to get to the rat. And Dumbledore makes the comment that he has not acted like an innocent man.
No.
Which I liked, and Ben was saying, you know, being in Azkaban surrounded by Dementors would probably make you a little crazy. He's bent enough on revenge that he doesn't really care how he looks.
Yeah, apparently most people do lose their minds when they're there.
Yeah, and I would say it's probably okay to guess that he's so bent on killing Peter that he probably isn't really thinking about or caring what would happen to him afterward.
Yeah.
So, you know, he gets sent back to Azkaban, whatever. He
right.
killed Peter, so he succeeded in his mission.
He wants to deserve being there, maybe.
Yeah.
He's not so much. I guess it's far too late to clear his name. He just wants to get the actual responsible party
mm-hmm.
and mete out some punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's just a little bit at the end as things resolve where he realizes that he's maybe not going to get that revenge, and the best he can do is to try to protect his godson.
Yep.
Which is a good turn, which is a good turn for him to take, because really he doesn't have any easily identifiable positive attributes before he offers to have Harry come spend the summer with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess in his youth he was, you know, handsome and funny and charming and all of that.
Right.
But we don't really get to see him doing any of that in this book.
Yeah, and a bit of a prankster. He's the one who tricked Snape into almost encountering Lupin during his werewolf phase.
And you almost wonder how malevolent that trick was supposed to be.
It is a little worrisome to me that as an adult, he still doesn't seem to think that it was that big of a deal.
Yeah, because
it seems to show he doesn't fully understand the scope of that action.
Because Lupin seems to be kind of, I think he would say, yeah, a person running into me in my werewolf form would not be a good idea.
Right.
Because he obviously has no control and would just tear whatever apart.
Right.
And so there is something going on there beneath the surface that we haven't really gotten into yet.
Yeah, it's just too hard to say after what he's been through if Sirius is a really good guy. Like, he seems to be on the good guy's side,
mm-hmm.
but it's hard to say if he himself is a very developed ethical person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But maybe we'll get more of that in the later book.
Something tells me that we will.
And then I guess Peter is the last of the Marauders we meet in this book.
Yeah.
A.K.A. Scabbers.
Yes.
I can't get over it, man.
Turns out to be the one who held the key to finding the Potter family,
mm-hmm.
giving the secret up to Voldemort, and then apparently blasting the crap out of the street and killing a whole bunch of people when
yeah.
he escaped, which almost seems a little out of character to me.
Yeah, he was the one who killed everybody. I mean, I don't know, maybe he's just so desperate to make his getaway and frame Sirius that he...
Yeah, well, I think it was more about getting away than anything else.
Because...
Like his,
yeah, Peter's not really, and he's on the bad side because he was working for Voldemort, but he's not really an evil guy.
Yeah, his defining characteristic is cowardice.
And so, you know, working for Voldemort means that he is the most powerful protector. Maybe he'll be on the winning side.
Right.
Kind of covering his bases, almost, more than he believes in Voldemort's
right.
crusade.
And he used to hang out with three guys who were pretty strong and pretty popular and were able to provide him protection when he was at school.
So he has a
history of hooking up with whoever he thinks can provide him the most protection.
But then he goes into hiding for 13 years. So his cowardliness remains because I guess he gets... Oh, that's after Voldemort kind of dies, though.
Right.
Never mind. I said he's hiding from Voldemort, but he doesn't do that until after Voldemort kills the Potters in the process.
Right. He's hiding... He's really hiding from everybody.
Right.
Because if he popped up in his human form, it seems likely that Voldemort's followers or Voldemort's opposition, one of those sides or both, would...
Find him and...
Know enough about him and not be happy with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'd think that he'd get tired of being a rat at some point, but...
No.
I guess better alive than...
That's what I was going to say. The most important thing is to stay alive. I mean, you could do worse than being someone's pet,
right.
I guess.
I guess you're cared for that way, at least.
It is kind of creepy.
It is a little weird when you think of that.
I love when he appeals to Ron and he's like, I let you sleep in my bed!
He's like, oh, yeah, get it off.
I did want to mention how Harry spares his life, because he just thinks that he doesn't think that his dad would have wanted his friends to become killers, basically.
Right.
So he doesn't think Sirius and Lupin should kill somebody. Not because he thinks Peter deserves to live, really.
Yeah.
And Dumbledore makes the comment that Peter is now in debt to Harry because he saved his life.
Right.
And assuming that'll come up again sometime in a future book. But it kind of reminded me how in book one, Snape is trying to save Harry's life, and Dumbledore guesses it's because he feels like he's in debt for James pulling him away from that dangerous prank.
Right.
So you have that tie-in and that thread through of wizards repaying debts.
Yes.
Kind of thing. Some kind of, like, magical requirement. I don't really know how it works, but
I can think of a parallel in other universe, in another universe, but I don't know, they need to necessarily go into detail, but there's like, I don't know, maybe even some of the ideas come out of this series, because I just don't know how, where authors get their ideas, but just the idea of like debts and promises having power in and of themselves, and that being important to people who are magical because they don't want to get their power sapped. And so then James Potter, the last member of the Marauders, which we know he's Harry's father, and we know he had friends and he was popular, and I'd say that's pretty much the extent of our knowledge.
And then Harry looks like him.
Yes.
That's what we know about James. Unfortunately.
So a couple of staff members, we also learned some stuff about. A new character, another one, Professor Trelawney.
She is the divination professor.
Yes, she's all mystical and stuff.
Yeah, so, you know, reading tea leaves, looking into crystal balls, reading palms, etc., etc.
Yeah, see, she seems to take joy in making negative predictions.
Yeah, she predicts multiple times throughout the book that Harry is going to die.
Yeah.
And probably soon and probably violently.
Yes. And she takes her art, her area of expertise, very, very seriously, and gets upset with people who don't take it seriously.
Yeah, she doesn't really care for Hermione's literal, logical, book-minded brain in her classroom.
You get the impression that she might be just a little bit full of herself, if not full of crap entirely, yeah.
Well, she seems to be largely full of crap.
Her predictions are not of the totally generic, you can find a way to make them apply variety, though many of them are.
Mm-hmm.
She makes a couple of more specific predictions that come true, though they're kind of specific in a way that's vague enough that many things could satisfy the prediction.
You can kind of write it off.
Yeah.
Yes, the conversation I liked was when she tells Lavender, you know, the thing you dread will happen on October the 16th. And she finds out that her bunny got killed by a fox. And she found it out on the 16th. So her prediction came true. And Hermione's like, well, was your rabbit old? No. Then why were you dreading it dying? I think one of the other kids asked, you were dreading your rabbit being killed by a fox?
Yeah.
Well, not a fox, but dying. Then Hermione says, well, he didn't even die on the 16th. You just got the news today. And I mean, it's not a great thing to say to someone whose bunny just died.
Well, but you know.
You kind of get her reasoning out that, yeah, it happened, but there's enough wiggle room there that
right.
Maybe she would have found something else to happen that would have upset her.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I suppose you could make the argument that something upsetting happened, something a little more upsetting than average run-of-the-mill day-to-day upsetting happening on the 16th could technically fit. So, I don't know if I should consider Trelawney to be a more of a fraud or just kind of annoying, but obviously her predictions are to be taken with at least a grain of salt.
Yeah.
And another staff member, Professor McGonagall, who's certainly appeared prior to this book.
Yes.
But
in chapter one of book one, actually.
Yeah, we get to see just a little bit more of her. We've seen enough of her by this point to comment on a couple of personality traits, I think.
Largely in reaction to Trelawney.
Right.
Who she thinks is full of it completely.
Yeah, she is quite disdainful towards Trelawney.
I liked the way Ben described McGonagall when we were outlining as stern with no room in her heart for nonsense.
Yes. She's kind of an adult Hermione to some degree.
Yeah.
Hermione is a lot more emotional,
I was gonna say.
But she's, McGonagall's into rules following and structure, and she wants things to be done properly.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't really have any room in her own personal universe for something kind of foggy like divination.
You would definitely, if she was your teacher, she'd be the sort of teacher you would never want to fuck around in her class.
No.
She would tear you up.
Though she does have her softer side, even if you don't see it as often as someone like Hermione. Like when Harry quickly made the excuse in the second book that they wanted to go to the hospital and see their friend.
Uh-huh.
She got a little misty there.
Or briefly when he's trying to convince her to let him go to Hogsmeade, and the narration makes some point of, you know, a look crossed her face. Was it pity?
Yeah.
So she's not just a heartless, stern person.
Right. And she couldn't be because she's also a huge Quidditch fan.
Yeah. The Lee Jordan commentary McGonagall response to his commentary.
Oh, that's always good.
Priceless. Always. Are you being paid to advertise the Fireball?
She had a point, though. It's kind of like if you were doing a basketball game and you just kept talking about a dude's shoes instead of the game. Oh, he's wearing the brand new Jordans. They're so cool. Look at him jump. I bet it's easy in those shoes. Hey, dumbass, there's a game on. What's he doing with the ball?
Yeah. But she is. She's a big Quidditch fan. She's a big Gryffindor Quidditch fan, obviously.
Specifically, yes.
She's
the head of the household.
Yes, head of Gryffindor House. And the other significant thing, I guess, we don't learn in this book that she can turn into a cat, because she did it in the first book.
Right.
But we learn the term for it, animagus, or animagus, or...
One of those.
However you say it. which is mostly important because we then learn that the Marauders became animagus to accompany Lupin around.
And that it's a rare ability, and that the Marauders actually were not registered,
right.
People didn't... The Ministry of Magic did not know they had that ability.
Because Hermione looked up the registry, because she's Hermione.
Right.
And I think made some comment that McGonagall is only, like, the sixth one this century or something.
Yeah.
So it's a really rare thing, because I guess it's really dangerous. Which shows McGonagall's skill at magic, and then also shows the Marauders' skill at magic and being able to do it when they were 16 years old.
Right. And with their motivation, like, there's definitely... That was definitely a tight-knit friendship, because they did it to be able to keep company with Lupin when he was in his werewolf state.
Mm-hmm.
So they transformed into... Well, or at least Sirius and James transformed into large animals who could hold their own with a werewolf.
Yeah.
Okay, and so that leaves us with one more.
We already talked about Snape a little bit.
Yeah, and, I mean, we see, like, the full extent of his bitterness, I think. Because he's basically frothing at the mouth crazed at the end of this book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because he wants to bring Sirius in, and he knows Lupin is a werewolf, and he wants him out of the school, and... He just hates Harry so much he can't help himself because he hated James so much. And he was... It sounds, in his defense, it sounds like they were picking on him quite a bit when they were in school, which, not cool, guys.
Yeah. But at the same time, he is holding on to those grudges so hardcore.
Yes.
Like, and I guess he doesn't hear all of the explanation of how Sirius is innocent, but he's so dead set against Sirius that he's not willing to listen to how he could possibly be innocent and wants the Dementors to suck out his soul immediately.
Right.
I mean, he is just dead set on that.
Right.
He's a dick. He completely picks on Neville nonstop for pretty much no reason except that Neville's a Gryffindor and a nervous person, I guess.
Yeah, he kind of passes that bullying along, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if there's a... I don't know if that's supposed to be part of the psychology of his character or if it's just that the mean people in these books are pretty consistently shitheads without really even a shred of nice behavior.
Yeah, I mean, you could, I guess, take into account that if you're bullied or picked on when you're younger, I think you're more likely to be a little bit of a bully when you get older.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how true that is for, like, school age or whatever, but right. I do know if you're, like, picked on when you're little or, like, abused when you're little, you're more likely to do it when you grow up.
Okay.
So, it's possible that some of it's some kind of psychological thing where he's just being a bully because he was bullied, but at the same time, he is kind of over the top.
Right. Well, it's also, like, you're an adult. Get over it.
Yeah, these are 13-year-olds, like, poisoning a kid's toad. Like, what the fuck?
Right, yeah.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Come on, Snape.
Harry, I know you hated his dad, but he didn't do anything to you.
That's true.
He's just a kid.
In fact, he only hates you because you've been so hateful to him.
Yeah.
Like, the two of them could get along.
It's true.
Wouldn't that be, like, a hilarious irony that you could enjoy, Snape?
If at the end of book one, Dumbledore said, oh, Snape was actually trying to save your life. And then Harry goes, oh, and then he and Snape have a conversation about it. And then they decide to get along.
What if Snape had become, like, Harry's older brother figure or something? That'd be a twist.
That'd be weird.
It's like, oh, I hated your father so much, but you're such a good kid. I just can't help it. That'd be...
such a good guy.
I don't know if that would fit very well either. Too extreme the other direction. So, a couple of issues that come up. Touched a little bit on the idea of discrimination with Lupin and his werewolfness.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's a condition he can't help. He was...
bitten as a child.
Yeah, I don't know if infected is the right word, but he's always, pretty much always been one. Obviously didn't choose to be one.
Mm-hmm.
And still can't find work because people just assume that he's unreliable and dangerous all the time, I guess.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if there's some kind of metaphor here or if it's just kind of a general people who are different metaphor.
Right.
And not a specific, you know, disease or disability or, like, homosexuality or whatever.
Right. I actually thought, when we were outlining, you were mentioning a couple of things, and I thought that AIDS might actually be a pretty good parallel.
Mm-hmm.
Especially going back to the early to mid-90s when we knew less about it, and, I mean, I think that was, if my memory is even close to accurate, I think that's about the time that it was common knowledge and that, becoming common knowledge and people were trying to educate people that it was entirely bloodborne and just having contact with someone was not necessarily
gonna
cause you to get sick. Yeah. And that I think the stigma of it was beginning to lessen a little bit, but I mean even now there's a lot of fear attached to that.
Yeah, and I was gonna say that I'm sure that people, even today, still don't get hired or can get fired for having AIDS or being HIV positive. depending on their situation.
It probably happens, yeah.
Protective measures in place, definitely, mm-hmm. now. But in the early 90s, that would be even more... Just think of the Tom Hanks movie, Philadelphia.
There you
entirely
go.
Based around that issue.
And then we were just talking about bullying, and it's bad.
Y'all, bullying's bad.
Yeah, stop it.
And that thread is mostly centered around Snape, as we were discussing
yes.
in detail. So, alrighty. I guess, any plot points that we would like to bring up?
Let's see. So, the night bus I liked mainly because it was violently purple.
It's kind of funny. It doesn't sound like a good way to travel,
though. No, it sounds like a horrible way to travel. but I guess it means wizards always have a way to travel, no matter what
Which
their circumstances.
Is good. Yeah.
The initial encounter with the Dementors, we've kind of touched on Buckbeak and Draco.
More proof of Draco's dickery.
Yeah, I mean, it's a magical creature where you bow to it and act polite to it, and it will let you handle it, essentially. And because Draco is Draco, he was a dick, and it bit him.
He called it a great nasty brute.
Yes.
And it already, like, Buckbeak had already bowed to him, and he was petting him. It was totally fine. Then he insulted him, like Hagrid said, don't do. And so the creature attacked him.
Yes.
Like, duh.
It bit him on his stupid arm.
I feel like, yeah, someone should have just said, what was happening? Someone could have said, he insulted it. Did Hagrid tell you not to insult it? Yeah. Okay, well, you should pay more attention in class.
You were right.
I mean, people get injured that badly or worse, it seems like, in Hogwarts classes fairly often.
On a routine basis. If it had been any professor other than Hagrid, they might not have even sent him off to the hospital wing. They would have been like, you know what? Sit there and bleed, dumbass.
Well, like, okay, so we're talking about McGonagall. Something like that happens in McGonagall's class. She might send him to the hospital wing, but if he had tried to get her fired or, like, bring up, you know, questioning her methods or anything.
She would have taken him apart.
Yeah, he would have never even dared. But Hagrid's an easier target because people think he's more buffoonish.
Yeah.
And he's not a fully qualified wizard.
Right.
Although he's pretty qualified to...
He does have a way with animals, yeah.
...teach care of magical creatures because he deals with them a lot. But I think that's the main thing, is that Hagrid's easier to, what's the word I'm looking for?
Manipulate, maybe?
Take away his credibility.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, and Hagrid doesn't, because he doesn't quite have the qualifications, he's also not quite as confident.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, again, using the example of McGonagall, she doesn't have any trouble with confidence.
Yeah. And it's if he had come back the second lesson a little more tame, and then maybe in the third or fourth one tried to do something a little more interesting again, and things went fine, people probably would have forgotten about it
right.
pretty quickly, but he just can't bring himself to risk it again, so.
Yes.
And then they kill all the flobber worms by giving them too much lettuce.
Which was kind of a funny joke.
I thought that was sad.
It was a little sad. I just thought that was it reminded me very much of like a Douglas Adams or Terry Pratchett. It was a very English sense of humor engaged in.
Yeah, like,
oh god, we've been doing these boring things and doing nothing but feeding them lettuce, and then they are finally talking to him after a while, and... Oh, Hagrid, how you doing? How are your worms? They died of lettuce poisoning.
Yeah. Dead. Too much lettuce.
Again, I'm hearing Marvin the Paranoid Android.
It's just like, can anything else go wrong in Hagrid's life? Can't we keep a fucking flobberworm alive?
Poor Hagrid.
I'm also just imagining these, like, little dark... Like big slug creatures, like with big mouths, like rah rah,
just like mindlessly eating, yeah,
of lettuce up to the top. Oh, it's making me sad. The poor flower.
I like how we're laughing at it, and you're getting your heart is going out to them at the same time.
My head is. What do flowers? flubberworms do. They're the unsung heroes of the Prisoner of Azkaban.
They mindlessly eat.
You just poke lettuce into their mouths.
And they eat it. Until they explode.
Oh,
it's a really disgusting way to toss a salad.
God. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, boy.
Let's see.
The firebolt we mentioned, an awesome broom.
Yeah, the best broom! Harry gets it mysteriously.
Yes.
And partially important because, you know, Hermione brings up a good point if it could be cursed.
Mm-hmm.
But also, one of the things we haven't really talked about is that book three, Harry and Ron's friendship with Hermione is on the rocks a lot in this book.
Yeah.
Ron and Hermione are mad at each other for, like, most of the book.
Right, because they thought that her cat ate his rat.
Uh-huh. Or, you know, the cat was just chasing after the rat most of the time, which was true.
Right.
And then when she adds on top of suspecting the firebolt of being cursed and having it taken away from Harry, that's just...
It's too much.
Yes.
Don't mess with a man... Ma'ams? Don't mess with a man's sporting goods.
Duh. Damn it, woman. So, fuck. I don't know what I was going to say there. I mean, part of it is, I guess, that they're just 13.
Yeah.
So they're kind of emo. But then there's also the added fact of poor Hermione is taking, like, 12 classes or something.
Right.
So she's just stressed out in general.
Yeah, Hermione is crazed in this book, taking double or triple classes some periods through a magical item that lets her turn...
A time turner.
Time back, called a time turner. Go figure.
Yeah, so she can go to her divination class... And then afterward, you know, go sneak in the bathroom, turn time back an hour, and then go to her Muggle Studies class. And
arithmancy.
Then, yeah, go turn the time back and go to arithmancy. And three classes at one time.
Mm.
Why you would ever want to do that, I don't know.
She just wants to know everything, man.
She's super interested in learning.
Can't help herself.
Her taking Muggle Studies was dumb, though.
Yeah, that was awfully silly.
Like, really, Hermione?
You could teach that class.
Yeah. I feel like they should... Muggle Studies should be a required class for anyone who wasn't raised in
that
family.
That's kind of an oversight. I would definitely agree. Since the wizards are so clueless of Muggles, they should require it for all... Basically... All pure-blooded wizards, and all the Muggle-born students just get a free pass on that one.
Yeah. It would help address the issue we've been having of, really, wizards don't know anything about Muggles?
Come on, Hogwarts, tweak your curriculum.
And I think it's in this book, Hermione even says, oh, I heard Hogsmeade was the last... completely wizarding village in all of England.
Right.
And I'm like, so you're telling me that only the people who live in Hogsmeade are not around Muggles, and every single other wizard lives near Muggles, or in a semi-Muggle neighborhood.
Yeah.
And they still don't know what a telephone is called.
Basically, anyone boarding that train to go to school should have a little more awareness of the normal world.
Come on!
Guys, you're killing us!
I mean, it's very cute and quirky, but still.
Right.
So, we should write Dumbledore a strongly worded letter about Muggle studies, apparently.
Something tells me he has a decent understanding of that stuff.
I'm sure he does. Well, he says in the first book that he has a birthmark that is a perfect map of the London Underground.
That's true. Though he could have been trolling.
Probably. Oh, God. All right.
Themes?
So we have overcoming fear is, I would say, the main theme in this book.
I would agree.
We have the... Basically, the personification of fear in the Dementors, who, again, make you relive your most horrible memories and are terrifying.
Right.
And then you have the introduction of the Boggart, which is a magical creature that takes the form of whatever you're most scared of.
Yep.
And a big chunk of the book is focused on Harry trying to being able to ward off Dementors.
Yeah, and he's learning a special spell, Patronus, one of those.
Yeah.
Which is supposed to counteract fear, essentially, by turning a powerful, happy memory into magic, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And then you have Peter Pettigrew kind of as a... I don't know if you can be a foil to a thematic concept, but definitely illustrating, like, how overcoming your fear is better than giving into it, because he joins forces with evil, not caring what it means for his own personal character, and then lives as a rat for 13 years.
Yeah, had a great life there. Whereas Harry is eventually able to produce the Patronus and saves his own life.
Yeah.
By doing so.
Time travel.
Him from the past.
Paradox.
Yeah, do we want to spend any time trying to tear apart the Time Turner paradox? Probably not.
Probably not. But he is able to save a couple of innocent lives that way. By, I guess, arguably by overcoming his fear.
Yeah.
And so I was going to bring it up with the issues, but there's enough of a thread of it that I wonder if it's actually a theme, this idea of crime and punishment, persecution of the innocent, Buckbeak and Sirius both being innocent of the crimes they are accused of, and both of them scheduled to be executed for it, essentially.
Mm-hmm. But narrowly escaping.
Yeah, escaping it, and I'm not exactly sure what the commentary is there, other than it's maybe hard to reverse people's preconceived notions of you or something along those lines.
Right, that if they already, everyone just expects that Sirius is going after Harry because of what happened, and they, the board who decides whether or not Buckbeak's going to be executed just assumes he's a dangerous creature already.
Yeah.
So making assumptions about people, again, I guess kind of bring up the discrimination thread.
Yeah, see that a little bit. And I guess Lupin kind of fits into that too, actually. Because he has to resign his job and hasn't been able to hold down a job because of people's view of him, even though he hasn't actually really hurt anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, so have a couple, any other points of interest you wanted to hit?
Yes. The fact that apparently after a Dementor attack, you can just eat chocolate and it makes you better.
Chocolate rocks!
That's awesome! Harry's like, stop forcing chocolate on me, and I was like, what is wrong with me? Eat all of the chocolate.
That's right. It solves everything.
I'm just imagining these, like, giant boulders of chocolate.
I know.
That there's, like,
after a severe Dementor encounter.
Sounds awesome.
It's like hand you a 5-pound chocolate rabbit and say, you have to finish this by tomorrow.
Like, yes, sir.
Done and done.
No problem.
Bring me a glass of milk, please.
It also made me wonder how, like, all wizards aren't fat. Because apparently they eat chocolate all the time, and then the Hogwarts students are, like, constantly pigging out at feasts.
Hey, that's true.
And going to Hogsmeade and, like, going to the candy shop and just eating all of the candy. How does Ron not weigh, like, 500 pounds? Just, like, talking about him, like, pigging out constantly.
Maybe he has, like, a skinny charm or something.
Yeah, maybe they can point a wand to themselves at the end of the night and just get all those calories out of there or something.
Metabolus boostus or something.
The other thing I wanted to point out, for the sake of the fangirls in the world, is that book 3 was the birth of the first gay pairing, I guess, in fandom. Which is not necessarily true, because people have been pairing up everybody in
it's what fandom does.
But the main thing that fandom, I feel like, latched onto, which is the Sirius Lupin connection. And I bring it up because I always remember my friend Rhea, in book 3, when Lupin's convinced that Sirius is innocent, and then he crosses the room and embraces him like a brother.
Mm.
And I think some girls the world overread that line and giggled. Not like, oh, they're just hugging, that's nice. Like, they gonna do it. And there's nothing really to support that in this book. I guess I'll...
It's just fun, huh?
In addition. But they were really good friends as schoolboys, and now they're gonna be friends again, so I don't know. It is kind of fun. And if you take, like I was saying, if you take the werewolf thing as being maybe a metaphor for being gay and persecuted, and then you make Lupin literally gay.
There you go.
Just kind of...
Use your literary insight to support your ship.
Yeah. So, I wanted to just mention that because that was the birth of that, and I would argue that's one of the most, if not the most, popular pairing in the world of Harry Potter fandom, so...
Right. And I wanted to just mention, kind of adding on to a discussion we had in the previous episode about kind of like bad guy fake-outs.
Yeah.
Because in the first book it was Snape, but then it wasn't Snape. And in the second book it was Draco, but then it wasn't Draco. And in the third book, Sirius is a crazed murderer and... Oh, no, he's not. Okay. I'm not exactly... I am exactly sure. I think Peter Pettigrew is probably the bad guy. Or maybe the Dementors, since they're getting ready to suck Harry's soul out for no reason.
Yeah, that was pretty fucked up. Goddamn Dementors.
Yeah, get back to Azkaban. Shoo.
Well, yeah, this book also made me question if the Dementors are really the most reliable guards. Because I know they're the most terrifying. They're definitely going to keep prisoners in their cells and make them go crazy.
Right.
But they also seem to be fond of randomly attacking people just to attack them.
Yeah.
So that doesn't seem like you necessarily want them guarding your prison if you can't...
I can see why Dumbledore didn't want them on school grounds.
They've probably just been, like, sucking the souls out of students randomly. I was
gonna say, let's put it that way. It's like, damn it, Dementors. And they're always like, yeah, the Dementors didn't get that guy. They're pretty upset. It's like, Dementors, calm down.
Just wandered onto the Quidditch pitch because they were like, happiness.
They're like, look, we did not come into existence to be prison guards. We are not lawful good. We like to eat souls. It's what we do.
Get over it.
We're hungry.
I wonder if you can have a conversation with a Dementor.
You can have some sort of communication with Dementors, it sounds like. I don't imagine that it's much of a conversation.
I just like the idea of you running into one and then being like, God, I just want to suck a soul out. It's so boring.
Like, calm down, Dementor.
I need all this happiness.
I'm going to need you to ramp it down a few notches. Why don't we just have a nice tea instead? So some of the strengths and weaknesses of the writing.
Yeah, so this is something that Ben and I both kind of noticed, although I think I noticed it in a little bit of a different form than
Ben did. Yeah, we came at it from different angles.
The thing I noticed in this book is that Harry seems to overhear an awful lot of important information kind of by luck and chance. And I thought sometimes that wasn't 100% believable or subtle enough or whatever. And the main thing I was thinking of was the conversation in the Three Broomsticks where he learns all about how Sirius and his dad were friends and then he was the one who betrayed him and specifically how. And I thought the addition of Madame Rosemary in that conversation being the, well, what happened next? I remember that. What's that charm called?
Right.
Kind of thing was not, like, super distracting because it's information Harry has to learn.
Right.
But in retrospect, I was kind of like, why would they have that conversation in the middle of a crowded bar?
Yeah, it is kind of an odd place for it. I mean, it stretches...
And Harry just happens to be the table next door.
Yeah, it stretches credibility just a little bit, maybe. Yeah. I mean, I guess could have had him be sneaking around the invisibility cloak in some other setting where it's more reasonable for them to have that conversation or something, but I did notice a little bit, aside from that specific device that the exposition is just a little bit clunky, I'd say, in general. Aside from the first, I mean, honestly, the first couple chapters of each book where it's kind of explaining a quick reminder of what happened since they were released a year apart originally.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's fine. It just happens in the narration, and if you hadn't just finished reading the book, then it would be a welcome little memory jog.
Mm-hmm.
But there are places in all of the books so far where Harry has come across something for the first time, and fortunately someone's been right there on hand to explain exactly what it is and how it works.
Yeah.
And it's just a little... It's a little too obviously exposition is more my issue with it than anything else. And that being said, it's a really minor issue. Like, it's something I notice, but it's not something that takes me out of the text.
Yeah, exactly. It's something I notice, but it doesn't bother me. I still think the story is interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the universe is imaginative and fun and, like, all the reasons that we are reading this, basically.
Yeah. And like book two, book three does a really good job of making sure everything that gets introduced becomes important later on.
Right.
So, we get a return of the Whomping Willow, destroys Harry's broomstick.
We do, as well as hiding the entrance to Lupin's anti-werewolf containment center.
Yeah, I don't know where that was. The Shrieking Shack.
Yes. Which was full of werewolf shrieking for a few years, and
apparently
spawned a whole set of legends about how haunted that was.
Sounds pretty effed up.
Yeah, like once a month when there was a full moon, that place was probably pretty terrifying to be around, and even just hearing those noises.
The other thing I like about the writing in this book, and maybe just the book in general, is that it's getting a little more complex. It's not following the exact format of the first two books, because we have some more threads in there, and we get this added complications in the generation of Harry's parents. So we learn about his friends, and about a little bit more of what Snape's deal is, and maybe a little bit of the atmosphere when Voldemort first rose to power,
right,
when they were younger. And so this is the first book where we get, well, I mean, we got Voldemort's past in the last one, but we get, like, a, this isn't just about Harry and his friends. This is going to involve, you know, things on a bigger level than that.
Yeah. Questions for the series? I guess I don't have anything to add to that after all.
Will Pettigrew make it back to Voldemort?
Yeah. Will Sirius be able to clear his name with people other than Harry and Dumbledore?
And will Harry get to leave the Dursleys and go live with Sirius?
Seriously.
Seriously, guys. Seriously.
What's going to happen to Lupin? Where's he going to go?
Yeah, can he get a job?
Yeah.
What can he do?
Come on, buddy. Come on, buddy.
Buddy boy. So, what do you think, Ben?
I liked it. Probably my favorite of the three so far. Just a little more compelling of a read, maybe. A little bit darker themes, tying in with some of the older generation kind of... I don't know, even though it was the first Voldemort-free book.
Yeah.
It was... I feel like I learned some things.
Yeah, I don't feel like we learn more in this book, because in the first two, you're still learning the universe, but
right.
At the same time, I do feel you're almost learning more about the universe in this book. And it's just because you get those added complexities of the universe this time around.
Yeah, so it seems maybe, like, a little less cutesy and a little more, like, some nuts and bolts stuff.
Like, the Dementors are pretty freaky, and here's these dark things. Lupin's teaching them how to defend themselves against, and people breaking out of prison and murdering, and like, that's all pretty serious shit, so. Alright, well... I guess if you would like to leave us a comment, you can do so on our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can tweet at us, at @novelideaspod.
Ben is tweeting, so check it out. You can email us, novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
And we're on iTunes, rate, review, comment, etc. Please,
etc. etc.
Let people know how awesome we are, or aren't, if you're inclined that way, I guess.
One star.
But mostly, how awesome we are.
never get over the one star. Next time we are obviously going to read Little Women by Louisa May Alcott.
Absolutely.
Oh, wait.
Harry Potter and the Little Women.
And the Little Women. Draco Malfoy hates Harry Potter some more. Draco Malfoy and the... I don't know. I got nothing.
Yes, and the fourth book of what I am beginning to suspect is not a trilogy. Draco will be a dick some more.
That's our prediction for book four. Draco will likely be a huge dick.
That's right. So, yeah.
Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
Yeah. in case you didn't have the order straight or something. So I guess that's going to do it.
Yeah.
See you next time. There's